Well, good morning. I'd say happy Easter is what I should have said right there. It's so good to have you here today. You guys are the third crowd that has filled up this house this morning, and just been an exciting time to come together and worship the Lord. And we welcome those who are also watching this live stream. We're glad to have you however you're connected. Man, I tell you, awesome to have the choir back up on the front stage here. It's been a year, and so wow. That just filled my heart with such joy. I was having a hard time singing. It was just like, wow, this is too good. And then to make things even better, someone brought me a chocolate bunny this morning, right? And it's over there, Scott. I've got safety by the chocolate bunny, watching the chocolate bunny, so none of you think about my chocolate bunny. Most of you are here today on Easter Sunday because you get it, because you understand it was big news after the crucifixion on Friday, when the women went to the tomb of Jesus on Sunday morning, and he wasn't there. Angels appeared, explaining that you don't look for the living among the dead, and that Jesus had indeed risen, just as he said he would. Don't know why so much mystery about the whole deal. He told them. They didn't get it. We know that the resurrection of Jesus Christ is a fact, because he appeared afterward to his disciples, and he appeared after that to hundreds of other eyewitnesses at the same time. We know this is history and a fact because people won't typically die for a make-believe fairy tale. Almost every one of the disciples, if you study church history, went on to die, some of them pretty terrible deaths, because they had been with Jesus. And Jesus and Easter showed them that death isn't really all that big of a deal. Not if you're a believer. You're here today, at least partly because you know that Easter changes everything. And that's a big deal. Today our focus is not going to be on the story that we usually talk about on Easter Sunday. It's going to be on a little lesser known story, also from the Gospel of Luke. It happens just after the main Easter story. If you have Bibles, open up to Luke chapter 24. We'll be reading text in just a little bit all through the message today, so be good to have one. This doesn't happen at the beginning of the day when the women are going to check on the tomb. It comes at the end, because sometimes hope will come to you at the end. Sometimes it comes late. Yeah, sometimes it comes early, but a lot of times it comes late. And why it came late for this couple whose story we are going to consider today may have something to say about your life and your hope and God's ongoing outworking of your story. So this today is the story of two people for whom Easter came a little bit late. Let's pick it up in Luke 24. We'll start reading with verse 13. Now the same day, okay, talking about Easter Sunday, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. Okay, stop there for a second. Don't close your books. We'll be back. Here's what we know. These two are members of the tiny little community of people who followed Jesus everywhere. Call them groupies if you want to. Jesus had them, okay? And we're going to find out in a verse or two that one of them is named Cleopas or Clopas, really strange name for a dude. In the Gospel of John, we read that one of the women at the cross was Mary. I mean, every other woman in the New Testament's named Mary, so that doesn't tell us a whole lot. But this is specifically told in John. It is Mary, the wife of Cleopas. She was there when Jesus was crucified. She was one of at least three Marys who were there on the day. A lot of Bible scholars believe that it is very likely that this couple here on the road to Emmaus were that husband and wife, Cleopas and Mary. Well, as we enter the scene, they are trying to come to grips with what has happened. And we don't know for sure, but Luke maybe infers just that maybe they're fussing a little bit. You ever snap at somebody you love when the stress is a little bit high? We all do that. So much has happened these past days, and they're reeling from the pain of losing Jesus. They're trying to fill in the gaps. They're trying to figure out just how in the world things could possibly have gone so horribly wrong. And while they're doing that, verse 15 told us, a stranger comes up. Now, you're in church on Easter Sunday, so you probably can figure out who the stranger is. You've read the story, maybe. If you haven't, it's a great story. Luke gives us this very intriguing phrase, they were kept from recognizing him. Their eyes are not open to who this is. Now, as readers, we, of course, know. We know exactly who it is. They don't know. And as they walk, eventually the stranger asks them a question in verse 17. What are you discussing as you walk along? Okay, what are you talking about? Question hits them like a brick. And notice in verse 17, it stops them in their tracks. They stood still. Okay, they just stop. Their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you the only one living in Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened in these days? You catch the force of the statement there? Are you the only person on the planet who doesn't have a clue what's been going on around here? Have you been living under a rock? How in the world can you not know? Well, at this point, the stranger could have gotten a little snippy if he had wanted to, right? Well, yes, actually, I have heard of Jesus. I am Jesus. I was just behind the rock because just 3 days ago I was nailed to a cross. He could have done all that, but he doesn't say any of those things. He's very polite. He says in verse 19, what things? You ever been in a conversation with someone you know a whole lot more than they know you know? What things? Tell me, what things are you talking about? So they tell him, verse 19, the things about Jesus of Nazareth, they say. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. That last line is so loaded. We had hoped. They're telling the stranger their story. You know, everybody has a story. You've got a story. If you want to do something significant with your life and your time, you ought to make an effort to hear other people's stories. Their story, at the heart of the story, are these poignant words, we'd been hoping. Chances are you may have lived with some of those words in your story too. We've been hoping to raise a great family, wonderful kids, have a long life, and then the doctor told us. We'd been hoping. We had this great dream, and we were going to accomplish amazing things, and then I got laid off from work, and I can't find a job, and I feel like such a failure. I'd been hoping, but then this habit that I've wrestled with on and off throughout my life has just taken a new grip on me. We'd been hoping, and then our son took off down the road to bad choices one after another, and now we're having to raise his kids, and we're paying for it. Cleopas and Mary say, in telling their story, we'd been hoping he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. We'd been hoping he was the one who was going to make our story finally come out okay, but our story has gone all wrong. To understand what they're talking about, we need to know a little bit more about their story, if we don't, because it relates to your story. They had this story as Jews. Now, none of us can fully relate to that because none of us probably here in the room today are Jews. As Jewish people, they were part of a chosen people, Israel, we call them. They had a destiny. They had a calling. They had a purpose. They were supposed to be the servants, the glorious representatives of God and good and hope on earth. A blessing to all of creation. But their story had gone all wrong. It started out really, really well. But by now, Israel's story was a story in search of an ending. It just seemed to keep getting worse. Then Jesus came along. Verse 19, they're talking about this Jesus guy. He was a prophet. He was powerful in word and deed. He said things nobody else has ever said. He did things nobody else ever did. And they really thought that maybe this Jesus would set the story right, that he'd lead some kind of a revolution and that would redeem and change everything, you know. He would overthrow oppression. He would get rid of their enemies and he would make their people prosperous and great again so that all of the world would know that Israel's God rocks, that he's king of the world. We had all these hopes. They say to the stranger, and things seem to be going so well. Just a week ago, it appeared everything was finally coming together. And then all of a sudden, everything went south. And then Jesus ends up on a cross. Now, you have to understand this to know why they were so devastated, why they're so down, dejected. And to understand this, you have to inject yourself into their chapter. See, nobody expected this ending. Nobody expected Good Friday. It's not just that he died. He died on a cross. That meant, by definition, that whatever they were hoping for, it wasn't going to happen now. He couldn't be the Messiah. Crucifixion was what Rome did to demonstrate that some rebel is not the Messiah, that he is not going to win, he is not going to have a last word or grow a movement or save or deliver his people from anything, because Rome doesn't tolerate such. And that's what the cross was for. And these two who are walking along the road talking to the stranger don't know what to do with this hard, horrible twist in the story. They go on. There's more. To make things worse, they say, even today we're kind of getting strange reports. Women, some of our women went to the tomb, and they said his body isn't there. And they talked about seeing an angel or something. Everyone's just going crazy. We're going home. And then Jesus incognito says to them in verse 25, "How foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe." Now, why does he say that? Doesn't sound very caring or very considerate or very Jesus-like. They are pouring their hearts out to this stranger, and he says, "What a couple of dim bulbs you are." That's kind of what it sounds like, but that's not what's going on here. He's not smacking them. See, everyone here, all of you and me, we've had this experience. You think you know what's going on. You think you understand the story that you're in, maybe how it's going to be written and end. You think maybe you're writing it. And then you find out in one moment of blinding clarity that you didn't understand it at all. Love a story I heard about a husband and wife. They've been married 60 years. Anybody here been married 60 years? I'd recommend you stay married. It's too late to change anything by then, right? This woman, this guy had been married for 60 years. They shared everything. They had no secrets from each other except little old woman had a shoebox she kept at the top of her closet, told her husband never to open it, never to ask about it, okay? For all these years, that had been the case. He never thought about it really even until one day the little lady got pretty sick and the doctor said she's not going to recover. And so they're trying to get their affairs in order, and the little man takes the little shoebox down from the closet, brings it to the wife's bedside. She agrees it's time to open it, let him know what's in the box. He opens it. He finds inside two little crocheted dolls and a stack of money, totaling $95,000. Okay? Well, the man asked about the contents, and the woman explained. She says, "When we were about to get married all those years ago, my grandmother told me the secret of a happy marriage is to never argue. And she told me that if I ever were to get angry with you, I should just keep quiet and crochet a doll." Okay? Little old man was moved by this. He had to fight back tears. Only two little dolls in that box. Okay? Only two little interruptions in 60 years of living and loving and marriage. And he just loved this woman at this moment more than he ever had. "Honey," he said, that moves me. And that explains the dolls, but what about all this money?" "Oh, that," she said. "Well, every time I crocheted a doll, I sold it at a craft fair for $5. Clarity, right? I love that story because that is the human condition. You think you know your story. You really, really think you know your story, but you don't really know it. You certainly don't know all of it. because you can't see all of it. One day you'll find out what your story is, but you don't know what it is right now. And then when you find yourself walking down a road you never thought you'd be on, you begin sometimes to wonder if you are in the right story. That's the human condition. And that's what happens when you find out you've been getting your own story wrong, maybe. Because, see, this is really important. The life that you live every day, the life that you live from this day on, this point forward, is going to flow out of the story that you believe you're living. Everybody has a story. And everybody's story is looking for an ending. And I wonder what your story is. It's good to think about. I wonder which road this current chapter in life is taking you down. See, these two that are walking along the road to Emmaus, they have a story. But this stranger says to them, you don't get it yet. You can't. You think you know, and you think this is the end, but it's killing you because you don't really know it yet. So let me tell you. Let me tell you. There is one who can explain your story. Look back to verse 25. We go back to Jesus' words. How foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe all the prophets had spoken. He goes on, did not the Christ, okay, that's the Messiah, the chosen one, the anointed one in their ears, did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Man, wouldn't that have been a fun conversation to listen to? Professor Jesus explaining how it all fits together. He says to them, let me tell your story a little differently, because there's a pattern and there's a theme and there's a bigger picture in there that you're missing, and nobody sees it because God is writing the story, and the story is so much bigger than you think. Let me tell you, that is true of you as well. Your story is so much bigger than you think. So let me tell you that story today, okay? The story the Bible tells, a story of suffering, as old as our world, as old as sin, as painful as death. It's not just suffering, okay? There's joy. There's a lot of joy in it, but joy that comes out of suffering, and joy in spite of suffering, joy that lives in the middle of pain in spite of our struggles. At the heart of this story, it's all in the Bible, you find the primary character is this joyful, yet somehow broken-hearted, suffering God, upon whom falls the weight of a willful, wounded, and gone-wrong world. Because the world is broken, right? You know that. We get cut from its shards every single day. It falls on him. It didn't start out to be broken that way, and it wasn't designed to be broken that way, but it got that way fast. We all know that part of the story because we live in a broken world. The Bible says that the core of this brokenness is a problem, something called sin. I have it, I deal with it, you have it, you deal with it. It deals with us. So way back, because of the problem of sin back then, God chooses his own people, this little people called Israel, and he says, I want to have a group of people who come to know me as I am, who come to know me and come to know what I want from life. And Israel is intended to be a flesh and blood expression of God's plan, his peace, his perfect shalom. Okay, that is when everything is as it is supposed to be. And people figured, okay, isn't this funny? People figured that God's story would finally pan out when God's people became great by the same measurement and definitions that other nations measured greatness. Okay? And this is how unenlightened folks thought in the ancient world. Every nation had a god, or they had many gods. And they all figured that if a nation was prosperous and strong, it showed that their god was the greatest of all gods. Here's the equation: great army, great wealth, great power, great king, great economics, great borders that are secure, vast empires equals a great God. It's what the Jews expected. It's what everybody in the world expected. And sadly enough, it's pretty much what everybody in the world still expects. Kind of the way we think about our nation sometimes. When you have it all, when you make it to the top, when you're powerful and wealthy and everyone likes you, or they're just so afraid of you that they can't disagree, when you succeed, that will vindicate and that will prove your story is a valid and worthy story, and that it's more valid and more worthy than any other. But here's the rub in the case of Israel. Instead of being poster children for prosperity and strength and peace, shalom, Israel's story had been exile, slavery, unrest, warfare, idolatry, civil war, chaos, abuse, imprisonment, oppression under the yoke of the likes of the Philistines and then the Syrians and then the Babylonians, then the Persians and the Greeks and now the Romans. Unexpected chapters. Unanticipated plots, unmitigated disappointment, unqualified disaster. And now their last great hope has died. And he's died on a cross. And now they can't even find a body. It's about as bad as it gets. But something is going on off stage. That's really easy to miss. Over the centuries, in that suffering little group of people in exile, not many of them, the Bible calls it a remnant of them, and a few prophets would come up with a radical idea that instead of military or national greatness, their true success as the people of God would be found in faithfulness to God in the midst of suffering. That their calling would be fulfilled not on their terms, but on God's terms, and that was going to be their story. It's like from the beginning, there's this world, and there's this wonderful God who loves it so much, and then sin messes everything up and makes the pathway smaller and narrower. And the story then gets even smaller, and it comes down to Israel, one people, and then it gets smaller, and it comes down to this one little remnant of these people, until finally it comes down to one last man, just one man. The stranger says, Cleopas, Mary, pay attention and think about this one man. What if the depth of his suffering actually confirms his identity instead of disproving it, like the world thinks? What if the crucifixion is not Rome's defeat of Jesus, like the world thinks, but God's defeat of evil and sin and guilt and even death? Verse 27 in our text says, he explained to them what was said in all of the scriptures concerning himself. Did not the Christ have to suffer? See, what he's saying is, what if all of history, okay, the whole story is squeezed down as small as one man hanging on one cross, as small as the opening of one tomb, and now that small tomb is empty, and the largeness of his plan is just beginning to be sensed. Verse 32 tells us that inside them, they're going crazy while he talks, okay? And they've got a long journey, and they're not walking very fast, and they just hang on to every word that he says. They keep talking until they get to the end of the road, and they say to this stranger in verse 29, sir, the sun is low, evening is coming. Would you stay at our house? Would you have dinner with us, basically? Verse 30, I love this. When he was at the table with them, he took bread and gave thanks and broke it and began to give it to them, and then their eyes were opened. And they recognized him. Happened when he broke the bread. Maybe they had broken bread with him before. Maybe they saw the scars on those hands that the nails had made. But it happened in brokenness. Verse 31, here's what happens. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. Isn't that great? I mean, this is great drama here. I would love to have seen that. Their eyes were opened, verse 32, and then he disappeared from their sight. Wow. They ask each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked to us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? It's interesting, they could see with their hearts before they could see with their eyes. They couldn't see, but then they saw, and he vanishes, and now they all of a sudden are able to see everything in a different light. They saw the whole story of his suffering. But it's not just that in Jesus God suffers. It's also that in Jesus God triumphs. In Jesus God has triumphed over our sin, triumphed over our guilt. He has triumphed over our failures, our confusion. He has triumphed over our regret, our problems, our critics, our death. It means that for you, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ and you believe that this man died for you and rose from the dead, it means that whatever road you are walking down, it means that whatever darkness you are facing in your life right now, whatever regrets you may carry around like a load of chains in your story, defeat does not, it will not, it cannot get the last word. That's good news for today. Sin and bitterness and hurt and death, they do not get the last word, because the same Jesus who was crucified by Rome did not stay crucified. They did their worst to him. He didn't stay dead. He was raised up by God from the dead in the greatest act of power ever witnessed through human history. And when he was raised up, every hope of every heart was raised up with him. For Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. That's what they saw in that moment. Do you realize Luke is telling a story here that'll change your story if you let it? Wish we had more time. I could tell you a long story, and you'd think you were walking down a long road. And I probably wouldn't tell it as exciting a way as Jesus did, and your hearts might be burning because you're hungry. I don't know. The first couple, though, go back to the beginning, Adam and Eve, they rebel against the story God has written for them. They take indelible marker and they try to rewrite the story by removing God from their lives. They eat forbidden fruit. And if you remember what it says in Genesis, after they ate the forbidden fruit, it says, and their eyes were opened. They were open to a lot of bad things, a lot of bad possibilities. From the early pages of paradise, the story is paradise lost. As the human, open-eyed, yet fallen, blind, and stumbling condition, until one day when a stranger came and lived among us for a while. And then as his story unfolds, millennia later, when this second couple receives bread from the indelibly scarred hands of this broken, crucified Son of God, exactly the same phrase that was used in Genesis gets used here in verse 31. And then their eyes were opened. And now they could see the long-suffering love of God and the indelible hope of a risen Savior. Can you see it? If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, the fact that the tomb was empty means that it is now paradise reclaimed. Paradise rediscovered. They got so excited. Okay, we can't quite finish the story. Luke says, verse 33, they got up and they returned at once to Jerusalem. You might remember how far it was to Jerusalem? 7 miles. And you know, when they started this journey, they were just whipped. They were emotionally, physically exhausted, but right now they cannot help themselves. They have a story now, and they have to tell it, and they go as fast as they can so they can tell it. Boy, I hope as you understand the outworking of what Jesus does in your own story, you'll be just as excited about telling somebody about it. That's supposed to define Christians, right? We're going to leave them in Jerusalem to tell their story, because as we finish, I want us to spend a little bit of time we have left talking about yours. And this is where I'm going to ask you to really look inside your heart. I'm going to ask our prayer team members to be ready. Because as the musicians come back up and take their places, we're going to move into a time of music and contemplation where we want you to be in prayer. The prayer team, I can tell you right now, they're already praying for you. And they're going to be at different places in this building, at the back and at the front, where you can just come forward and sit down with them. And if you're not comfortable doing that, you can find them after we're finished in a little bit. And they'd love to pray with you and for you. Okay? That's what they're for. See, I don't know really your story. I know little bits and pieces of parts of it, but I don't know exactly how it's going for you right now. I know if you live long enough, you're going to get disappointed, you're going to get hurt, and you're going to suffer in ways that you didn't see coming, and that it may confuse you, and it may make you wonder, where is God, and whose story is this? I had been hoping, but I've been hurt, and I get so anxious. I feel so alone. I do the right thing, and I get attacked for it. I try harder and harder, but I fail badly. I'm so weak in the flesh. I'm insecure and envious and petty. You know, every one of us have to decide which story we're going to live by. And our world is going to be glad to give you one. The world will tell you, go with the success story. That's a really good one. Everyone likes that one. Just be successful. And it's about what people have always thought. It's about money and fame and power and health and prestige and status. The world loves this story. Even churches have a false gospel about this story. The problem with that is if you live with that story long enough, eventually you will die and they will bury your attractive, successful, wealthy corpse in the ground. And that story will be over. Other stories. People, some of them try the there is no story story. That life has no meaning beyond what we give it, just this moment, no purpose, that we're here by accident. Some people buy into the victim story. That's pretty popular. Somebody done me wrong. Somebody offended me. It's just not fair. Others prefer the entitlement story. You owe me. I have rights. And they spend their life trying to chase those rights and get what's coming to them, or the story just plays out in a life of anger and jealousy and bitterness and rage and pettiness. Some people choose to live the it's all about me story, or the I am a rock, I am an island story, and they feel no pain, or they try. And the list could go on and on and on, but none of these stories, no matter which one of these stories you pick, none of them can satisfactorily deal with the questions of suffering or meaning or hope or responsibility or redemption or what happens in your life after the worst happens. And their ends are all ultimately the same: frustration. They're unsettling, they're unsatisfying. These are your options if you decide to do it the world's way. But then for 2,000 years, there has been this other story. Jesus has been talking about the unlikeliest little stories, and he weaves those into his, and we stumble along through life, and sometimes when we least expect it, this stranger comes alongside us, and he says, I'll give you a different story if you want one. I'll show you a better way to live out your chapters, and then I'll give you a better ending that nobody can beat. And through his brokenness and our own, our eyes and our hearts are opened. That's what I love about Easter. Easter is God's story. And it is God's story ending God's way. Father, thank you for Easter. And thank you for the greatest story ever told. I don't think our human brains can fully comprehend how great it is, how good the news that came out of the worst, most awful news of all. Father, I pray that today you will help us to see our stories, and you will help us to see the better story that you have written, and that we will run to you, and we will fall at the foot of the cross, or at the open door of the empty tomb. And we will praise you for what you have done and what you are doing. It is through the name of this Jesus who rose from the dead that we pray today. Amen.
Hey church, we're so glad you tuned in today. If you need prayer or have questions about this week's message or what it means to follow Jesus, you can message us on Facebook or visit our contact page on our website at whackonline.org. If you're interested in joining our church family, we have the next steps available for you on our website as well. Remember, we are real people experiencing real grace. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.